your favorite restaurant has always been Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze.
Really? That sounds pretty good.
The Scarab Swarmcast is recorded, mixed, and produced at Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze in Columbia, South Carolina. Mostly. Scarab is the South Carolina area role players and board gamers convention held annually in Columbia, South Carolina on MLK weekend for 4 days. The Scarab Swarmcast podcast is hosted by and features many of the Scarab staff and guests. Views and opinions expressed on this show usually come from a random D20 chart or an FAQ found on the web somewhere, and usually don't reflect anything any sane person would or should think. I'm Toast, your kobold announcer. And now, here's our host, John Middles!
Hello there! Welcome back to another episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. I'm your host, John Manus, as you probably heard there at the beginning. We've decided to change some things up here for Season 3, so this is kind of the crossover episode, the brand new episode of the brand new season. We're going to have some new segments that we're going to be introducing in Season 3, but for right now, because of some things that have been going on with in my life, my wife and I, Ruby, we moved into a new house. And so as we've unpacked some stuff, I realized that a lot of my stuff that I need to record this podcast is still kind of packed up. We're still kind of settling into the house. But fortunately, I happen to have more stuff that was recorded at Scarab, the last little bit of what was recorded for the Podcast Mania section. So you'll get to hear myself, Jason Wright, Dell Collins, I believe Mary Harbo jumps on there at one point. And what's his face? Donald Dennis. He's got some podcast out there somewhere. No, it's Donald Dennis from On Board Games and the On RPGs podcast. And of course, Marty Connell is also there from Rolling Dice and Taking Names. So you get to hear us talk some more about Scarab. It's a little bit different from what you've heard before. And you actually get to hear Dell talk a little bit more about some of the things that have gone on this year with Scarab. It's some interesting stuff. We also just got back from GnomeCon in Savannah, Georgia, where I got to meet Christian Muckler with the Ultimum RPG. That's Ultimum RPG. In fact, their website is ultimumrpg.com. You should go check them out. They've got a Kickstarter going on for his game. It sounds like a really cool RPG. You'll hear me talk with him quite a bit about this RPG. I'm very excited about it. Anyways, his Kickstarter ends on March 20th. So you still have about 4 or 5 days by the time this comes out, by the time this episode comes out, to check out the Kickstarter. Go do it now. It's already funded. That's the best part. So if you throw some money at it right now, you're going to get the RPG. It's a neat little sci-fi kind of survivalist sort of thing. And it's going to be tabletop. It's primarily a tabletop RPG, but it sounds like it's going to span multiple platforms. Anyways, as you heard, we changed up the intro. I have a little orange kobold from Ninth Level Games, from the Kobolds Ate My Baby game. His name is Toast. Some of you may have met him at the convention or at other conventions where I brought him. He's insisting on doing our intros and some of our bumpers now, so we'll see how that works out. But coming up in future episodes, we're actually going to roll our Kick in the Quick, where we review quick start games and free RPG day games. Games where companies put stuff out so you can quickly get into it and try out their games. We're going to roll that into our regular episode. So each episode, you're going to get at least one Kick in the Quick review. There's also going to be, we're going to introduce a segment where I'm going to come on and just kind of talk about something that I might be doing, something that I'm kind of interested. It'll be all kinds of geeky and stuff like that. You guys will love it. And I'm going to give Ruby a chance to do that. In fact, I don't think I've really told her yet, but she's going to kind of be rolled in as kind of a co-host for parts of the show. And there's going to be some other neat segments that we're going to add into the show. We're going to try to get some more game reviews. And more importantly, we're going to read some of your emails, questions, things like that on the air. That being said, send us email and questions and things like that for us to read on the air. You can email them to swarmcast@scarab.com, and that's scarab with the little hyphens in there, so it's s-c-a-r-a-b.com. And if somebody can record a kind of a cool little jingle or something that I can play really quickly anytime I have to say anything that involves scarab with all those little dashes in it, some sort of, like, I'm thinking some sort of like a little hip hop or like a rock kind of beat, you know, S-C-A, you know, something like that. Send it to me. And if I can use it, if I like it, I'll send you something. I'll give you something cool. That being said, I'll go ahead and get into the Podcast Mania wrap up, as it were, which should be a nice little closer to the whole Scarab 2015. And from there, I'll go into my interview with Christian Muckler with Ultimum. And you can, again, check them out, ultimumrpg.com. Go ahead and check them out on Kickstarter right now. But you got to go right now, because it's going to end on the 20th in about 4 days.
Scarab 2015, coming to you live and direct.
But, from the Medallion Conference Center.
But only if you're actually here is it actually live. You get the idea. This is Sunday. Probably one of the craziest, busiest years we've had for Scarab, from what I've seen.
Day 3 of 4. So right. If you're looking for a long weekend of gaming and general geekery, come out to Scarab next year. Do we know when that's going to be?
Yes, 16, 17, 18, 19.
It's always Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, so that's easy enough to remember and mark on your calendars. We started sometime in the afternoon on Friday, and people were lining up at the doors to get in here. I believe we opened Reg at noon, and I want to say there were people waiting at like 8 o'clock in the morning out there.
Not to mention any names. Luther was waiting in the parking lot at 9 a.m., sitting in his car in the freezing cold.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
We felt like taking pity on him, but then we didn't. We just had him sit there for 3 hours.
He said, oh, that looks so sad.
We should probably introduce people, John.
We probably should. I'm John Manus, the host of the Scarab Swarmcast. Sitting to my right is...
Jason Wright, occasional guest on the Scarab Swarmcast.
And to his right is...
Del Collins, sometimes director of Scarab.
The queso grande of Scarab.
Queso grande.
Yeah.
And I'm Donald Dennis from Onboard Games. And to my right is the mythical man himself.
Mythical? That means I shouldn't exist. But I am here. Oh, sorry. This is Marty Connell, one of the co-hosts from Rolling Dice and Taking Names.
And so, for some reason, they gave us podcasters a place to talk away from the buzz and hubbub of the show. So to start over, this is the Scarab Con, the 5th edition, right?
Your 5th edition? Number 5, yes. Number 5. So Friday was officially the first day of our 6th year in business. Because we actually started the company a year before the con. So this is the culmination of 5 very long years of hard work.
What, you had planning?
We did.
Amazing, right?
Unlike so many conventions that you probably attend, we actually don't wait to do Scarab all of our planning at the last minute. Usually, you'll see a lot of posts on Facebook or other things like that from other conventions where people are going crazy as far as... it's so hectic. We're in the middle of planning all of our stuff right now. But usually for Scarab, the last 6 weeks up to the convention, we're kind of on cruise control. Actually, we'll start booking our facilities and getting all of our advertising ready about a month in advance. So
what's your projected attendance for this year?
We were 450 pre-regs, which was a huge number. Normally, we don't really talk about our numbers, but... we've had a good year. It's been a significant amount of growth over the last 5 years. As you can see, we've expanded the facility yet again, and we're probably going to expand again next year. We're hoping to get 2 more years out of this facility, so is our goal. But if we continue our growth at this rate, 2017 may be questionable whether or not we can be here. So we're doing very well. Doing very well.
And we've been ahead of our schedule for many years now, if I recall correctly.
Yes, we are currently 5 years ahead of schedule. We were not supposed to be in this building until next year. So our original plan was to be at the Scottish Rite for 5 years and then be in this building for 5 years. We've been here now 2, and if we are able to get 2 more out of it, I think we'll be lucky. So we had a original 5-year plan, and now we're well into our 10-year plan.
So they let you book the facility space that far in advance?
Yes, sir. booked the original contract we had with the Scottish Rite, which God bless all Masons. They let us book that facility and sign a 5-year contract. And when they saw that we were bursting out of the facility in year 3, they were nice enough to let us out of the contract, no penalty, and we moved into this one. So yeah, and these people have been really great to work with. Highly recommend the staff here at the Medallion Center. They're really great.
Excellent. Well, let's whip around the table real quick and have some con highlights. We'll go ahead and start with you, Dell.
Definitely last night's mega event for Pathfinder Society was a con highlight for me. We had...
Well, what is a mega event? What do you mean by this?
So, it's last night's event for Pathfinder Society, we had 15 interactive tables all playing the same game simultaneously. Each table was able to interact from table to table, all playing the same adventure in a timed and controlled environment. So it went off without a hook. Was great. I think we only had one player death, which was really fantastic to hear.
Aww. You mean one character death?
One character
death. Yeah.
Not a player death.
Yeah, yeah. Many player deaths, but only one character death.
Well, okay then. Yeah.
So that event, it was great, and it's great to see it growing. So that's definitely been an awesome bonus.
Jason?
It's hard to pick. I mean, I think my highlight's probably being able to play Savage Worlds game alongside Clint Black playing Deadlands Noir yesterday and watching him completely one-shot a boss, you know, the only combating character in the scenario, and ending the game a good hour and a half early. That was pretty entertaining.
So did you feel cheated that you didn't get that extra hour and a half of screwing around before in-game, or was it the lead-up to that made it all work anyway?
The lead-up to it made it all work anyway. Everybody got some time in spotlight. There was a lot of role-playing, a lot of faffing about, but you know, it was something where there was only one actual combat scenario, and while it can... On the one hand, yeah, it's a little bit anticlimactic, but on the other hand, just watching it happen was just sort of a thing of beauty.
And you were the GM for this, or you were playing?
No, I was playing.
Who was the GM?
GM...
Was it Darren Miller?
Was it Darren?
I believe it was.
Curly hair?
Yeah.
It probably was.
Yep.
I think Darren GMs most of our good stuff. No.
No.
I mean everything Darren GMs is gold.
Yeah, so we had 3 people at the table, and Clint sat down, just took a 4th chair, and... went with it, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and having Clint was a cool bonus. I mean, I hear that his daughter had said that she wanted to come to Scarab this year, so it was cool that Clint drove all the way down and bought a badge and showed up. So that was really cool. It was a nice bonus.
So for our listeners,
we love Clint.
Who is Clint? Why should our listeners care that some fine gentleman named Clint Black showed up?
Well, Clint Black is a famous country singer. No,
famous country singer.
I mean, he is, but this Clint Black is part of... Well, he writes a lot of stuff for Pinnacle, and I know he has a company called Beautiful Brains, but you can see his name on a lot of Deadlands stuff in particular.
He does a lot of event stuff for them.
Yes.
Kind of one of their personalities of the system, that everyone who knows Savage Worlds and goes to cons and stuff has probably heard of him.
Right.
And if you look at the spine of Necessary Evil, you will see it say Necessary Evil Clint Black.
Yes, that is his book. Big one.
Yeah. And it is one of my favorite games.
And his wife Jody does a lot of editing for Savage Worlds and I guess
others.
Pretty much anything they'll let her edit.
Yeah.
Well, John, how about yourself?
As far as highlights, of course, there's the Scarab Iron GM contest that I was hosting, but I knew that was going to be one of my highlights. But probably my biggest highlight was just the amount of people who've come by my Scarab Swarmcast booth and have said, I listen to your show all the time. That was great, because I wasn't expecting that.
No. The scavenger hunt was off the chain.
Oh, the scavenger hunt. Yeah, let me talk about the scavenger hunt, because that was another big highlight. We did this social media scavenger hunt, or the Scarab Smash, as we were calling it, where we give them a list of a bunch of crazy things. There was 102 crazy items that people would have to go around and take pictures of with their phones or their smartphones, and then post it onto Facebook. And we have a special group set up for that so that other people could actually view all the pictures for that. And points were tallied up, and the amount of, there was stuff on there that I just kind of, that I made up, that was like, no one will be able to find anything like that. And they found them.
We had mythical things on there.
Yeah, it was like I'm just going to make something up. This doesn't even exist. Let's put it on there. Like the Scarab Cola was on there.
And Scarab Bandito.
The Scarab Bandito. I was like, yeah. I don't even know what that is.
And the highlight of that event, if you didn't notice, was the bear hugging a shark.
Yes, it's a very disturbing bear hugging a shark picture out there.
I was sitting in the Pathfinder room when a guy comes in with no shirt, covered in hair, his own body hair, and goes up to the lawyer and hugs him and says, does this qualify for a bear hugging a shark? To which I believe we ruled, yes, a hairy guy hugging a lawyer qualifies as a bear hugging a shark. And it was pretty disturbing.
So Marty, what did you see? Let's get a picture of shirtless hairy man out of our minds right here. My highlights was a lot of my friends came here to do more of the board gaming side. My sons did some of the role-playing stuff, so I focused on more of the board gaming. So most of my time was spent in the board game room, and probably my highlight was the first time our group had got to play the new Stefan Fell game, Aquasphere, which just came out this week. And we got to play it twice, really enjoyed it. Some people love to rank where their failed games are in their list and stuff, and some had it in the top three, some had it in the top four or five. But anyway, it was a great game, and it was just a highlight to be able to play it for the first time. And you're talking about having to expand. It would be awesome if you could make the board game room just a little bit bigger next year, because that place was packed, which is awesome, but sometimes tough to find an empty table.
Well, we've got that option of moving the dealers out into their own space, and I think that's, we're going to do something like that. So we'll have more space next year. Even we can tell we already need it. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Good problem to have.
Well, yes. And I think that having a central location for a bunch of dealers where everyone's sort of going to go through that space, because if you're not playing board games, you might not accidentally stumble through the dealer's room for that serendipitous purchase or what have you. So,
But well, and the whole concept, the whole kind of mad scientist concept about putting the dealers in with the board games is really to get role players going in there and going, hey, it looks really cool, and hopefully getting more role players into board gaming, because we see a lot of cross-pollination from board gamers into role-playing, and for whatever reason, people who start in role-playing, we don't see a lot of cross-pollination back. And so what we're trying to do is help develop more cross-pollination into board games. Because, heck, you can sit down in there for 2 hours and play a great game and still make it in time to get to your role-playing session.
Right. So probably the most write-as-out-loud thing that I had happen was played a game of Fiasco, which is always a good time and generally not something that we can talk about too much on the show because it never stays PG-rated. So it was a neat playset that we did. We just had somebody walk in, one of the organizers for the role-playing room, why don't you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hi, I'm Mary Harbaugh, and I am running the open RPG track here at Scara. So, good to see you all.
Oh, one second. I guess we're moving the mics closer to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can talk louder, too.
Well, if you can do that on day three of the con, excellent. Go ahead. How have things gone in the role-playing room?
Oh, things have been really good. We've had a lot of tables filled, a lot of players playing different games. We had a really good variety of games running this year, and I think it's been really successful.
Prizes? Did they like the prizes?
They have liked the prizes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've given away quite a few Call of Cthulhu books.
How do you
13th Age? Yeah, sorry.
So, what is this prize thing, and how do you give out prizes for role playing? Is it who wears the silliest hat, or what?
Nope. So everybody that plays gets a ticket to draw. So if you're a GM, you get two tickets. If you're a player, you get a ticket just for sitting at a table. Because in role playing, of course, most of the time it's cooperative. It's not like there's a winner. And then all the tickets go in a bowl, and we draw out a number of tickets for every slot, and that's how we choose the winners. Then if you're a winner, you get to pick a prize off the shelf. We've got a bunch of different role-playing books. That's the majority of the prizes, but there's also some dice, some accessories like cards and things like that that go along with it too.
We do also have some board game prizes we give out for certain board game tournaments. And I want to say it's a similar process.
Yeah, but Sean didn't show up, so we don't talk about him.
Oh, that's no. Right. Yeah. Yeah, he's not here.
He's not. He's not. Well, actually, for the board game stuff, there are specific events that are prize ticketed somehow. And if
correct.
You, and it's like I was scheduled to run, you know, six games or so previous to this, and since they weren't part of the tournament structure, no tickets were awarded. But if I'd have managed to have gotten in the Munchkin tournaments or whatever else they were doing, then those are where the tickets for that kind of stuff happens.
Correct.
It's not quite as wide open as the role-playing game stuff, but on the other hand, you can get in a lot more board games.
Right.
Unless you're
right.
playing what was that game you were playing yesterday? Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. You know, or Battlestar Galactica, in which case you're in it for the long haul. Mm-hmm. So what would everybody like to see? We've talked about dealer's room stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, where we'd like to do some more stuff with the dealers. What would people like to see for the future of the event? And we're going to start with Jason and work our way around.
All right. And this is really also, you know, I'm not officially part of Scarab, but it's also sort of incumbent on me. I want to see a bigger variety in the RPGs available. I mean, there was a lot of Savage Worlds and more Pathfinder than I think the human brain can comfortably endure. But yeah, there's. I know tonight what I'm signed up for the night session. Someone has a Fate Core game based on what looks like a firehouse.
Another Darren Miller game, yeah.
So, sure, I will definitely sit down and give that a try. That's something a little bit different. I know last year I ran a Call of Cthulhu session. I signed up to run another one. That game didn't take. So, yeah. Just part of my commitment is going to be to try to bring a little bit of a greater variety to the types of games available.
I would like to see the Scarab Iron GM contest become bigger and bolder than ever, but I have something personal invested in that because I run the contest.
I'm going to commit right now to being in it for next year.
Awesome. So awesome.
You want to compete in it?
I'm going to compete.
All right.
As a GM.
That sounds great to
adding
me.
Adding tables to the Iron GM. Yeah. Make John happy.
We put put six available slots on the board this year, but I'm thinking I might need to move that up to a few more slots. Yeah, so that's one thing. I would like to see that get bigger. I would like to see more RPGs added to the schedule. I know we've got plenty of Pathfinder. We don't need more of that.
Pathfinder's an RPG?
No, Pathfinder is a tactical combat simulator.
I'm just kidding. We Pathfinder's great. We love Pathfinder. I would just love to see more more expanded RPG track, but that requires getting those GMs to get off their butts and run stuff for us.
I already said I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, that's the other goal. I want Jason to run some more games for us. Dadgummit.
Marty.
Yeah, so, well, obviously I'm in the minority here because when it comes to RPGs, I'm more the casual RPG player. But I will say it was kind of interesting that Pathfinder's a fun system. My son has like $100 worth of books, and I've played it before.
So he has two books.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, long term talk. What was interesting to see that I didn't see a lot of it was with the brand new D&D 5th edition coming out. I thought I would see that all over the place because, again, coming from a casual perspective, a lot of my friends who are like just kind of dabbling in it, that's the one they kind of lean towards because there's lost some intimidation by some of the non-name stuff. So maybe for the RPG stuff, for trying to introduce, you know, there's talk about board gamers cross migration. There can be some intimidation if you've never done RPG before, so maybe something to help those who aren't heavy in RPGs to kind of get into it, get their feet wet. And I know you probably offer some things where you can just do like little one-shots, but I know, well, Wizards is trying to push their whole D&D encounters thing, which is a short 1 to 2 hour session where you can play with pre-gens and stuff like that. So from the board game perspective, if you're trying to integrate with the RPG, that would be kind of cool to see. And obviously, always as you grow, I think y'all have a fantastic games library, but you know, always seeing some of the newer bestest and newest games in the library would be kind of cool too. So that's me and the minority of the little board gamer guy over here, so I'll let you go with your RPG stuff.
No, actually mine's a board gamer quest too. What I want to do is set up some kind of of event where maybe it's a board game decathlon where you know, the rolling dice take names on board games. You know, maybe this, if the Scarab Swarm class will let us do board game stuff on that too. But we're between, you know, our three shows and any other podcast we can get to show up, that we set up, you know, a series of events that, you know, play through all of these and get some big prize, you know, at the end of the show, you know, whoever is, you know, or be in the drawing for something like that, but something that's specific to our shows.
That's a good idea.
That sounds like a great idea.
That'd be really, really cool.
You're last.
Oh, I'm
you're skipping you. After last.
Okay.
Well, I'm with Jason and John. I would really like to see our RPG track continue to grow, and not only more variety of games, because we definitely could use a lot more variety, just getting more players over there. I do think we definitely need to grow our D&D 5th Ed. And we put one game in each session except the very last one, which is hard to make that last Monday slot. Right now, we actually have an extra table of D&D that made themselves. They said, hey, we have too many players for one table, but this other person was willing to GM, so they've sat themselves an extra table. So I think we definitely need to add some more slots to that, because we underestimated how popular that was going to be this year, and that really pleases me.
And I know that probably a lot of RPGers poo-poo on D&D, you know, it's like, well, that's not a real life.
No, I've heard great things about it. Everybody's been saying that it's getting back to what they liked about D&D, the earlier editions, and that's kind of the direction they're wanting to go.
But I think one thing is just because it's so well-known, that is, if you talk to somebody who's not really into the RPG stuff, one of the first things that's going to come to mind is that one, just cause of familiarity. But this could be a jumping in point to other things. For example, you know, I tried out D&D, and now probably the main RPG I play is Shadowrun. Uh-huh. So it kind of went from this, it's like, oh, I like this other system, so I'm going to try a little more crunchy or whatever like that. So I just think maybe that's just a good stepping point because it's so well known.
Uh-huh. Well, I agree.
And D&D 5th is the first D&D I've really been interested in since 1987. So, you know. Oh, we have gremlins.
Of course we do.
Oh, that has been... This is really turning into... I mean, I know last year you had the whole kids track and family track and all stuff, but it seems like Scarab is making a significant effort to be a family destination.
Well, there's something in the water.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the staff have just had babies recently.
We did start the intensive Scarab breeding program. you know, everyone's
Gangenics.
Asking about more role-playing judges. So my three kids are now, two of them are role-playing judges. Of course, they went straight to Pathfinder. But Katie does like to role-play Kobolds Ate My Baby. But so we couldn't get enough role-playing judges, so we just bred some more.
Oh, excellent.
Seems to work. And we got to wait a few years to grow
by
them
Scarab 18, we should be ready for
we should have a few more, you know. Yeah.
Well, we had a lot of children being born about 9 or 10 months after Scarab 2014.
Weird how that worked out.
Wait a minute, I missed that event. What was the schedule?
But we see my wife and I, we were prototyping that one before the action.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
thanks
for playtesting that one for us.
Take one for the team.
The Dalliance RPG. So, Del, what do you want to see? What's your big hope?
So, obviously, my hope is to see more of everything. But the D&D 5th Ed has been great. I would love to see us have 20 tables of D&D 5th Ed. Our goal for this year was to try and get about 4 tables per session of D&D 5th Ed. But I can tell you the reason that we didn't was not because the players and GMs didn't want it. It was literally because WotC makes the process so difficult to schedule it. It is really unbelievable what we had to jump through to get D&D 5th Ed encounters at this event. WotC's got to fix that problem. I thought Paizo's problem was a little complex, but having to deal with WotC and the level of bureaucracy was tough. So I would definitely love to see more D&D 5th Ed. I would love to see more RPG in general, because I am an RPGer more than a board gamer. This was the first year that we had a significant number of Tier 1 RPGers. And a Tier 1 RPGer, a Tier 1 Game Master, is someone who gets their room comped. by Scarab. So we had several...
Wait, this is a thing?
Yes. So we had several game masters who are in rooms paid for by us. And we give them quite a bit of stuff to help them cover their costs and expense of coming to Scarab. And that's available to anyone. That's not it was originally available only to Pathfinder judges, but we opened it up to any role-playing system, and we've had great response to it this year. So, you know, hopefully next year we can fill two or three more rooms full up of people that want to come and run non-PFS stuff.
All right, Marty, I'm off team board game. All role-playing games.
Yeah. I'm a loner. I don't know why I'm by myself.
So, and the board game track is just awesome. Like you said, the board game room just fills up. So it's doing really well. We are the largest Pathfinder Society event on the East Coast. The only one larger is Origins. We beat Dragon. We beat them all. We have over 250 tables of Pathfinder Society. Next year, I'm hoping to have 350 tables of Pathfinder Society.
So you beat the Northeast, because they do a lot of cons up there.
Yep. We are the biggest one on the East Coast. Huh. The only one bigger on this side of the continent is Origins. That is it. We smoked them all. We beat them all. So next year, we're going to hopefully continue that trend. I just want to see more of everything. And I got to say, the LARP track, you know, the LARPers are over here on the side, and they've been kind of hidden from everyone. I think they actually enjoyed that more than being out in the middle of everything last year. But the LARP track was awesome, watching those guys run around. So I definitely would love to see more LARP and a wider variety of LARPs too. Yeah.
So I was going to throw in there too is your miniature area, your war miniature area is really nice too. It's my son came and played in some events this year. The people who run the Iron Arena for War Machine, the Privateer Press game, does an excellent job. They bring in some incredible prizes. I mean, the guy who runs it uses his points to basically get like one of every model that he can get. You play games over the weekend, earn points, and earn free prizes. So I just appreciate that area of the con, too, that I think a lot of people are like, ooh, really impressed by, but maybe never go in and check it out. It's a great section, so you do a great job with the miniatures, gamers, too.
Definitely don't want to neglect the miniature guys. Our Warmer Hordes coordinators are Brian Cape, Michael Brown, and you're right. Not only do they do an awesome job for Scarab, but they do an awesome job for GnomeCon, Mace, StormCon, Scarab. Those guys work, and they love that. They love that game, and they're real true hobby enthusiasts. They, like you said, they spend their own points and their own money to promote that game. And I can tell you that in the Southeast region, there are no other coordinators like we have here in the Southeast region. The guys in Augusta and Raleigh-Durham, the Northeast doesn't have guys that are dedicated like this. The South, Midwest South, they don't have guys that are dedicated like we have here. So we really truly are spoiled with that. We're really pleased to have the Masters event. We had 6 weeks notice on a Masters event and almost filled the tournament up. It was fantastic. So we're going to definitely have another Masters event. Our Warhammer is going to go back to a two-day tournament next year. So the way the facility will hopefully look next year is Pathfinder and role-playing will be moving and switching. We'll hopefully put role-playing in Capital City. Pathfinder will go to A Salon, and then miniatures will be solidly B. And then we'll move we'll probably move the dealers around a little bit and spread out a little bit. So hopefully next year we'll see even more expansion and a little bit more elbow room.
So once again, this is the year 5 of Scarab, so Scarab 2015, and next year, once again, it's going to be on MLK Junior Weekend.
Gee, with the weather like this, I wish I could go outside and do some gaming. Hey, maybe this ancient D4 that I found in that pyramid will hold some sort of answers. Let me roll it really quick and see what happens.
Who dares rubs the magic D4 and summons the genie of gaming?
I do.
Silence, fool!
Whoa, okay.
What is your wish?
Well, I really wish that I could, you know, go to some sort of gamer camp or something like that.
You do not need to make a wish with me. You just need to check out Scarab's Scorpion Gamer Camp, May 1st through 3rd, 2015.
Hello.
You'll get 24-hour gaming, LARPs, role-play games, Pathfinder Society, board games, and more.
Well, that sounds really cool, but what about other outdoor activities? Because, you know, sometimes I like to...
Whoa. You also get such fun activities such as archery, fishing, swimming, horseback riding, boating, outdoor games, hiking, and an evening bonfire.
Bonfire? Well, sometimes I get hungry and, you know, I like to eat and game.
Silence! Meals will be provided. Dinner on Friday. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner on Saturday, and even a breakfast on a Sunday!
That sounds pretty good. But sometimes I like to sleep. Where am I gonna sleep around there?
You can sleep in the bunkhouse, or you can tent outside.
This all sounds pretty good, perhaps a little too good to be true. I wonder how I sign up for this thing. Is there some place I need to go, or something like that? They probably have, like, a bunch of tickets or something, right?
Space is limited, so you need to go now, fool!
Right now? Well, how do I get there?
Go to Scarab's website.
What's
www.s-a-r-a-b.com? Click on the link for Scorpion! Tickets are $63 per person. 100% of the proceeds will go to the charity, the YMCA.
Okay.
Space is very limited.
I got that. I wish you would stop yelling at me and something.
Is that your wish?
Yes, I mean, no, I mean...
My name is John, as some of you probably already know if you listen to this. And I'm here at GnomeCon 2015. I don't remember which number GnomeCon it is. It's either the third or fourth year. It might be the fifth year. And I'm here with the creator of the RPG Ultimum, Christian Muckler.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How has your GnomeCon been?
It's actually one of my first gaming convention.
Okay.
So it's been a lot more interesting and fun than I thought it would be. I had as much fun walking around looking at everybody else's stuff as I did talking about Ultimum.
Why don't you tell us about Ultimum?
Well, Ultimum is a science fiction game, and you know we have a lot of high technology in it, and that philosophy kind of bleeds into the overall business plan for the game as well. We wanted to design a game that really took advantage of these new technological mediums we have available to us. It seems like for the last 30 to 40 years, every RPG is a book and dice. And while that's great and it's fun, and I think that that should be a cornerstone for all games, why aren't we using our phones and our tablets and our computers, maybe even our consoles, to augment our play? We all have these devices. We all bring them to the table. We should all be able to use them in a streamlined and efficient way. So Ultimum, philosophically, is a really good, well-written science fiction game with the ability to be played on a phone, a tablet, a PC, each app on each of the mobile, tablet, and PC devices can be played without a book or dice. You can sit at a table with people who have books and dice, and you can have your phone and or your tablet, and you can integrate seamlessly with them. The app has a character builder, a dice roller, a inventory manager, combat tracker, initiative tracker. It even has a little map on there that you can move your characters around on so you know where you're standing compared to everybody else. And all of this is going to be done through Unity. And it's designed to create a paperless tabletop gaming atmosphere if that is what the player wants to do. You can still get the book, play with dice, and never see one of the apps, or you can do both. This mobile medium allows us to give people an opportunity who don't have access to gaming groups regularly to be able to play online with each other. All these devices usually have a microphone and a camera, which will allow you to integrate your video and text chat with your other players, so you can play in real time. And our website will incorporate a matchmaking system so that people can find games easily without looking at 6-month-old forum posts looking for players. I think we've all seen that. And we want people to be able to use whatever medium that they're comfortable with to get into tabletop gaming, because anyone who's tried it knows that it is a unique and an amazing type of gaming that people just don't understand its value, I think.
Right. I am actually really excited about because of the way you're using technology and all of this. To me, it seems like there's a lot of gaming now where you can tell they're trying to utilize some more of this technology. Like, I'm going to use Pathfinder, for example. Mm-hmm. You have things like Hero Lab where you can create your character, but then you can import it into like a D20 Pro, I think it is.
Right.
And then you can kind of do some playing with some friends online.
Right.
Where you get the aspect of the, you know, the maps and moving the miniatures. But you're still kind of having to deal with multiple types of programs and systems.
And compatibility issues, too.
Right. So this is really kind of rolling all of that into one nice, nice little thing. And I like the fact that you're also... You're able to do Ultima in a sort of a mixed environment, I guess you could say.
Right.
So if I really am like, no, technology bad, I'm going to use pencil and paper.
Then you certainly
can. You can still do that.
Yep.
Because I admit, I was one of these folks who was like, oh, if I see a laptop on my gaming table, that's it. I'm not running the game for you. But mm-hmm. now, not so much. And I think part of that was because I was just waiting for the technology to actually kind of catch up to where I wanted it to be. And now it's like, oh, sure, you got your character on a tablet. That's fine. But that's really kind of where most of the stuff really just is now. It's just more like, well, I've got a PDF of my character sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But then a lot of times, like, and now I got to back out of that and go into another program if I want to look up some of this stuff. Or you're still going, well, it's not in there, but I have this backpack full of books.
So you still have to carry it anyway.
Right. But with this, you're saying the rules and everything's already
rules
in
will be
there?
In there. We're looking at a really nice touch interface where simply like holding your finger down on a talent will pop up the dialogue box so you can see exactly what it is. You'd have like ideally tabs on the left, and these tabs would, you could just pull them out, tap them, pull them out, and look at the different sections of your character sheet, your inventory, combat section, your text chat section, there'd be even basically a database rule set system. It wouldn't be very graphic heavy, but you could easily look up the rules that you wanted to look up so you could see what you want to do. And of course, this could also be very automated for people who aren't familiar with tabletop games, where as long as you have input correctly, your weapons and your stats and all that are in there, you can just press the attack button for that gun, and it'll roll the dice for you that you need to roll. And
that's awesome.
And you don't even have to try and math it out. It's done for you.
That's awesome. So many gamers that I'm used to dealing with, just the math of things just throws them off.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they've got this thing, they've got out of Hero Lab where it says you have a +5 to hit with your longsword. They still go, all right, let me see. I have base attack is this and this. I'm doing this type of special maneuver, so I think it's a negative something or other to this.
Yeah.
So anything that takes some of that, takes on the load of some of that like you're saying, the math part of that. So all I have to do is, and you said you could just kind of set it up so you just go, I'm on attack, roll.
Yeah. I guess from a design perspective, I'm kind of a battering ram who breaks down barriers. because we all have those players in our gaming groups who just don't grasp the mechanics or the statistical value of, you know, the different mechanical systems.
Right.
But they still want to play the game with their friends. They still enjoy the role play of it, and they like being a part of the group. And I think that it's possible to make a game so that all of us crunch heavy players and us maybe not very mathematical players and us confused players by the 4,000 numbers on our page, we can all play together with a little bit of help from technology.
Okay, that's cool. So it's something, it's a little something for everybody.
It is. It is.
and I like that. Anything that can, and it sounds like it's going to really cut down on that time that's usually gone in certain games.
Absolutely.
With stuff like that.
Yeah.
Especially when you have the, like you were saying, the group where it's you, like you were saying, the that has the different personalities at the group, at the table.
I hate playing a game session and it's, you know, tonight we're going to do our role play and next week we'll do our combat session for 6 hours. I want all that stuff cut down so that we can do our role play and our combat. It's almost tough for a GM to just do a random encounter anymore because a random encounter takes up the whole night.
Right.
That shouldn't be like that. A combat should be quick, exciting, and simple so that players can get into it, do it, enjoy it, get out of it, and get back into playing the game.
Okay. That sounds like a good catchphrase for a good slogan for Ultimum. Quick, exciting, simple.
Yeah.
Tech.
I'm gonna use that. I'm gonna start using that.
I see that you're sitting and you've got this interesting shirt on that's got this interesting logo on it.
Yeah.
PHX1, Phoenix Explorer.
Yeah, so kind of our catchphrase for the game is to survive, explore, rebuild. I'm wearing one of our developer shirts for the Phoenix Militia. This is going to get a little deeper into the story, but in Latin, as a kind of a military squadron shirt, it's a per vivo, exploro, restituo, which is survive, explore, rebuild.
Okay.
So that really kind of sums up the story for Ultimum is survive, explore, rebuild.
Now, is it? You said it was a sort of futuristic science fiction,
yes,
sci-fi kind of tilt. Anything you can reveal kind of about the general aspects of the setting itself?
Sure. So basically, to give kind of a quick timeline of events, we have developed artificial intelligence around the 2020 area, and they actually are our friends. We get along very well with these AIs.
What? That's
crazy.
We do.
We get along with them.
That's crazy. That's something I've never heard of in sci-fi.
We're trying to do something a little different. And part of our plot device for that is that in order to create these automata, is what they call themselves, there's an extraordinary amount of rare earth metals, including a very valuable metal on Earth called rhodium. And rhodium you can't just find everywhere, and it's what makes up the cerebral cortexes of these AIs and their minds.
Okay.
So they cannot just go upgrade themselves whenever they want, because the mineral does not exist to do it outside of heavy manufacturing. So there's also, in our history that when these AIs are brought up, there's a very strong movement to ensure that they have the same rights as people. They have the right to choose. They are not precluded from killing people. But as machines, they think logically and they understand that there's no value in killing people.
Okay.
Because then people turn against machines and there's a war, and they can see that bigger picture that that's just not how it works out.
Yeah, they all saw the Animatrix. They know how that goes down.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly it. So they actually end up taking kind of a big brother role to humanity. Okay. You have an automata with you. Maybe he's hanging out with some guys, and the guys are like, hey, let's go bungee jumping. The automata just kind of does a facepalm and goes, you guys are crazy. Why would you want to do that? You guys don't need to do that bungee jumping. What if your cable breaks, So it's they actually create a very stabilizing influence for humanity, and it allows us to hit the singularity that we hear so much about from the futurists without all the bloodshed. And this helps us make leaps and bounds in technology and space exploration.
Okay.
So we decide to start exploring our galaxy with the help of these automata. In particular, the first one created, his name is Tellus. He's a scientist. And he helps develop wormhole traveling technology. We send some fleets out, and they meet aliens that kind of control our galaxy, and they are awfully terrible. And they found out about us, and they're on their way to come and destroy us or enslave us. So we find out about this, and there are three automata that are the first three. There's Tellus, he's a scientist. There is Achilles, he's a Spartan warframe. He's basically like a big war machine robot.
Okay.
And then he's also a strategist. And then there's Heron, who is an architect. He's a builder.
Okay.
So these three automata kind of calculate out. They're seen as sort of the figureheads of the automata community. And they calculate out what would happen and what we need to do to survive. And they say, we need to build a fleet. So Heron begins constructing a fleet. Tellus begins constructing a wormhole that takes us to the Andromeda galaxy so that we can get as far away from these bad guys as possible. and they all, so Heron's building the fleet. They load up as many people in the fleet as possible. And, we're talking tens of thousands. And they go through this wormhole to the Andromeda galaxy. As for everyone else on Earth, that's when Achilles comes in. And he tries to develop a strategy to defeat them or, at least slow them. And after looking at all the data we have from the exploratory fleet, we decide there's just no way this is going to happen. We'd be throwing rocks at them, and they've got, you know, laser guns.
Right, right.
So it's just not going to work. But he has an idea. If we can't win right away, and humanity is technically going to survive because of the fleet, then we can slow them down while we create a plan to defeat the aliens much later. So they get a brilliant geneticist, and these three machines pick out some local animals known for intelligence, their social ability, and their ferociousness. We pick bears and wolves, crocodiles, and primates. These animals are brought together. They are genetically experimented with to take on certain human elements such as bipedal walking, increased brain size, things like that. And it's going to take a long time for them to evolve as animals down the lineage line.
Right, right.
So this is very much a very long game plan. And they call it the Nemesis Protocol. So the automatic each take a group. Achilles takes the crocodiles, who we call the Crocodan. Heron, the architect, takes the bears and the wolves, who they call the Osborn. And Tellus takes the primates. And they go to different secluded areas of the Earth, and they raise these animals and cultivate them in secret, while the aliens, who we find out are called the Anunnaki, wipe out humanity.
Huh. Okay.
So over the course of thousands and thousands of years, these animals eventually begin to walk upright, and they go through a very fast forced evolution. And meanwhile, the three automata kind of raise them, and they teach them, you know, what it's like to be a civilization and how to work together.
Okay.
They also teach them all English, and they teach them how to write English. So it only makes sense.
Okay.
And then they teach them how to fight. And they go to old stockpiles of weapons that have been buried in bunkers since the 21st century. They organize them into these fierce guerrilla groups and militant groups. And they basically blindside the aliens live here. They blindside them and wipe them out because the aliens were totally unprepared for this. So now we've got these animals that live on Earth. Mm-hmm. And there's a few aliens that are thrown into the mix of this fight as well, that were enslaved by those aliens, the invading aliens. So we added some extra guys to the roster of playable races that aren't just animals and people. Okay. So a short time, maybe a couple hundred years later, a few generations down, humanity returns. Now, due to the theory of relativity, the time on Earth, long time.
Right.
But for this fleet moving at the speed of light and being in the, you know, near intense gravitational forces, they've only had about 50, 60 years that they've been gone.
Oh, wow.
So when they return, the Earth is totally different. We have continents that have collided and created another supercontinent, which is called Pangaea Ultima.
Cool.
You can Google it if you want. That's kind of where we got the name from. And this supercontinent is now home to these few alien races and these animals. And so we pick up the story where humanity has crashed on Earth, and we have a cinematic trailer that kind of shows this event happening. The aliens left all this stuff in orbit that, you know, is still there. So it's not an exact welcoming home party or anything.
Right.
And now humanity must survive amongst the wreckage of their crashed fleet ships with a whole bunch of animals that don't. They've heard about them, but don't really care or know about them.
Okay.
You know, the simians, for example, the primates that. They believe their destiny as the most intelligent race is to be the new rulers of Earth. So they're not really too happy with seeing humanity.
Yeah.
we have a lot of political dynamic involved with how these races get along. And this is very much a kind of a Wild West frontier kind of environment where, you know, a man's destiny is on what he can explore and how he can rebuild this world. And we wanted to make this a very dangerous setting, but there's still ruins. There's still things out in the earth that can be found. We have some reasoning behind all that. So that's kind of the nutshell story of where we pick up the game.
Okay. And what type of, well, you mentioned all these different races. Will all these different races be things that people will be able to play?
Absolutely. Our playable races are the humans. They meet a race in Andromeda called the Atlancer. They're kind of like space elves.
Okay.
There's a race that comes to Earth to help the animals. They're called the Noxians, and they actually kind of look like space dwarves.
Cool.
And we have the Visayans, who were slaved to the Anunnaki. They're a race made of pure energy. And their homeworld is highly magnetic field. Uh-huh. They're able to survive there. But as soon as they come off their homeworld and they lose that field, they just kind of dissipate and explode. So they're fitted with these little devices that contain them inside of a humanoid shape to be able to work as like slave labor, and they can power equipment and things like that.
So
you get to play one of these guys. And then, of course, we have our Crocodan, our Simians, our Osborne bears and wolves. And, of course, you could play an Automata, who are – they're probably one of my favorites. It's fun being that robot who – is kind of logical and seeing everything from a different point of view. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned the explore and survive aspect of this. So would this be kind of like a similar vibe to what you would get? Are you familiar with Earthdawn?
I am.
Okay.
There is kind of a similar kind of... Yes, I would make that comparison, absolutely. You could even maybe throw it in maybe a little bit of like the Defiance show where there's still kind of that remnant.
I was kind of thinking that, especially when you mentioned all the debris still kind of floating out in space.
That's certainly like that.
Well, were there any particular influences on how you came up with this game?
The primary thing was, like, I started with what are the races? And I kind of fit the story. I made the story to kind of fit the races. Okay. And ideally, like, I love science fiction. I'm actually a big Mass Effect fan. So I wanted something kind of in that vein. But the thing is, like, for anybody who's played a game like that, until Rex or Garrus speak to you on that screen, you can't possibly relate to them because they're so alien, right? But I wanted to pick races that people could relate to. So we can relate to ourselves. We can kind of relate to robots. We've seen them around. We kind of interface with what we're seeing as robots now.
Right, right.
Even if it's a Roomba.
Right.
You know, most people think their Roomba's kind of cute. He cleans and he just kind of rolls around the floor. But we have that sort of – we're developing that affinity for them.
Right.
We all love animals. Everybody's got a favorite animal. So we can kind of relate to crocodiles being – kind of gruff and nasty and tough. We can relate to wolves, you know, being very communal.
Being very much the hunter type.
Yes, absolutely. Bears being kind of wise and somber, but very strong.
But very big,
very big. primates not liking us because of Planet of the Apes.
I was thinking that.
It just has to be that way, you know. But we can relate to them like that. And, of course, they don't just look like elves and dwarves, but like our Lancer and our Noxians, our space elves and space dwarves, we can relate to elves and dwarves because of all the fantasy we have available
to us.
Right, but we gave them great, we gave them really great backstories. And in fact, we actually picked a planet that's supposedly suitable for human life, where the Noxians have come from. So, you know, it's a big world that has high gravity, so they're shorter and stockier and very dense.
Okay, so you basically used scientific reasoning as to why these things are.
Yes, we did do our research on this.
I like that. I'm a big fan of things that logically explain some of the different aspects of that. This game is hitting on a lot of aspects that I'm excited about because I'm a big sci-fi fan, but I've also been a big fantasy fan for a long time.
Right.
Let's talk about some other things that are related to this game itself. So I understand that you're located out of Jacksonville, Florida?
Yeah, our main development team is in Jacksonville, Florida. We have an amazing artist whose name is Vlad Ganelli, and he's located in Romania.
Okay, and I do want to say the art on all of this that I've seen so far has been pretty cool. It's been very amazing. I've been very impressed with it.
Oh, thanks. Vlad's art is just so immersive. When you look at these characters and these places that he paints, you feel like that's a real place, that you're really in that environment. And that's what kind of drew us to him. And, you know, the fact that I can kind of tell him, I'm thinking of a crocodile man, and then he can draw that and paint it and send it back to me. And I'm like, wow, Vlad, this is exactly what I was thinking of. This is amazing. So we have a great relationship with our artists. And part of the reason I was enjoying coming to the convention is to meet new artists that can also help, because a role-playing game book has a lot of art in it. Right. One guy can't do it all.
Right.
So we're looking for some help, especially with like our monsters and such. That's going to kind of lead to our book.
Okay.
We'll talk about that, I guess, in a little bit. But
yeah. Well, since you brought up the book, I understand that you guys have a Kickstarter currently.
Yes.
Tell us about this Kickstarter. I understand it's going to be ending fairly soon.
Yeah. We've got 14 or 13 days to go as of today.
Okay.
It ends on March 20th, 2015. And we asked for 10,000. And we're actually, based on some of our donations just while we were up here, I think we're at 11,000 now and climbing.
Oh, excellent.
So we hit our goal. We actually hit our goal the Thursday right before the convention. And that took a lot of stress off my shoulders. But yeah, we've got some people who've donated $1,000 to the campaign that love the idea of technology and using the apps and and such. So,
and for those guys, I think I heard you saying that you was it you or somebody's going to be running a a game for them.
Yeah, my lead developing consultant downstairs for content. He's going to be basically writing a unique module for each $1,000 backer, where the character that they create and using that model will be used as one of the major NPCs for the rest of our storytelling.
Okay. Now for this game, for Ultimum, you're going to be putting out a physical book?
Yes.
And obviously an electronic version of it as well.
Yeah, we're looking at like an October release date for books, apps. We're trying to do a full launch around that October window. Obviously, things can come up to delay a project, but I foresee none of that. Our book is primarily done. We're just looking at getting extra artwork and things like that. And since the book's done, we kind of know what the app has to do. It's just putting tables in and numbers and things like that. So,
see, and that's always something really good to hear, especially for a Kickstarter, to know that you're already so far ahead of the
absolutely
of the thing.
Yep.
So that's gonna be cool. The now for the book itself, is it coming out in a what type of formats is it coming out in?
So we're gonna come out with a hardcover book. Uh-huh. It's probably gonna run around 300 pages. I'm actually not a big fan of some of the business methods of the larger companies where they have these $60 books that you have to buy 10 of the books just to get the stuff that should have been in the first book.
Okay.
So Ultimum is kind of a rules light system. It has some complexity, but it's the whole mechanical system can probably be put without art in about 50 pages. So what we want to put in the core rule book is lots of story so that people know what they're doing. You know, like, unfortunately, I use Pathfinder again. The Pathfinder core rule book does not have story in it.
That's true. There's nothing really about,
there's nothing really about. There's no story or setting. There's no monsters.
That's true.
It pretty much is 600 pages of rules on how to make a character and make some items and spells and stuff. So we were going to put at least 20 different animals and enemy types in the book so that people have something to start with in the core rule book.
Very cool.
We're going to have so much. There's already so much story in the beta book as it is. But we're going to put as much as possible, everything that we can in there so that people know very well from a GM perspective what the setting is that they're trying to run. We're going to have maps in there. We're going to put everything in there that would take 5 or 6 books for everybody else to put out.
So you mentioned the beta book. If I go on to Kickstarter and I back this thing at a certain level, am I going to get access to this beta book?
Basically, if you back at any reward level that offers the beta book, I believe that's the $20 level and up, we will send you, if you can provide me with your email address, I will email you a copy of the beta book, the character sheets, and we have an initiative wheel thing that you can print out too if you want to kind of do it. But you could also just draw a circle on a piece of paper if you want. I will send you that as soon as I get home. Anybody that asks for a beta book that's pledged, we send them one immediately because we want them to see where we're at and kind of get a grasp for it. And then from there, we update them with new beta books as they're produced.
And honestly, that's been one of the cool things about not just what you're doing with Ultimum, but with a lot of RPGs that go into Kickstarter, I notice they tend to try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you backed us. Here's a little, either a little taste or a sample of adventure or something, but this is an actual beta book. So if I wanted, I could take this and go, hey, let's kind of try out a little.
Absolutely.
Something on
there's enough story and enough rules and enough fluff in there that you could pick up the beta book and play that game with your group.
But yeah, I like that aspect of I've pledged already, and especially mm-hmm. since you guys are already funded. So yeah. I know I'm going to get it. So yeah. it's nice to get that little extra something right off the bat. So we've talked about the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter. So if I go to Kickstarter, I can just look up Ultimum and it'll come up.
We actually tried a campaign last year from October to December,
uh-huh.
and we did not make our goal. And it was really us going through the learning pains of like how to run a Kickstarter campaign.
Right.
And we had some really off quotes on what it would take to get things done. And it was just so much to learn so fast. And within 2 weeks of the Kickstarter, we were like, we knew we weren't going to make it. But we let it run just to kind of keep the advertising and build the fan following, et cetera.
That makes sense.
excuse me. But for this new one, we hit it in 40 days. So we're out of 60. And it seems like it's steamrolling now quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
I think we've made just 2,000 since Thursday. So, I mean, we're making, it seems like the word seems to be, I think there were a lot of people who were kind of like, wow, this sounds great, but I'm not sure how they're going to do this. And then once we hit the goal, they're like, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it.
Yep, let's do it.
It's going to happen, so let's let's get it. Yeah. And I've talked to a few other people who have kind of gone through the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. oh, we did a Kickstarter, it didn't make, but we learned a lot from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've even heard stuff from people who've been like, we did a Kickstarter, it made, and then we learned a lot from it. Mm-hmm. and it seems to me, well, it's better maybe if you learn stuff and then fail than the other way.
I don't want any.
I know that's messed up quite a few people.
Yeah. I'm a business consultant by trade, and I've done a lot of traveling and I've worked for businesses and such. And, one of my first things I did when I started coming up with these ideas and getting really serious about it was I started writing my business plan. So, like, other than the crowdfunding part, the whole development of this game, like, I've stopped working now to make this my full-time job.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I have the plan in place already. Who's going to be doing what for the book? Which artists will be painting what? Which guy will be working on what for the app? Who's going to be working on the website? All that stuff has been kind of put in play.
Okay.
But of course, I'm waiting for the Kickstarter to succeed before I go with it. Yeah. So, and now it's at the point where, how much am I going to actually have to work with? Can I put some more revenue into this side or this side? So,
okay.
Once the Kickstarter ends, it's go time at full speed ahead.
Awesome.
So
aside from the Kickstarter, where can other people find out information about Ultimum? I assume you guys have a website.
Yeah, we have a website. It's a very simple website right now before we build our monstrosity that Match makes games and everything.
Okay.
And for right now, it's just pretty much there for information purposes to look nice. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a Facebook group. If anybody that backs friends me on Facebook, I'll put you in the group. We've got about 400 people in there that are all kind of learning the game and beta testing it and trying it out. And I post updates to there about mechanics, and I put polls up there to kind of see what the players are thinking when I talk about certain things. So it's a very active group. We have a Twitter account. I don't really use it very much. We have somebody who kind of does it on their off time.
Isn't that always the way it goes?
It is.
That's kind of how
I think I'm too old for it.
That's kind of the way it is with Scarab right now. We have the one person we're like, well, we have a Twitter account. I don't know what it is, but we have somebody who takes care of that for us.
Yeah, I've kind of put all the eggs into the Facebook thing. And I think that's about where we're at. We have a Google Plus and all that other stuff too. But
makes sense.
Facebook seems to be the place to go. If you're terribly anti-Facebook, just email me. I will respond to your email. I will get back to you. I've responded to 100% of the emails I've gotten because, like I said, this is my life right now. So when it comes in, it's on my phone. I see it. I respond right away.
That's pretty cool. So I also heard that the game itself, there's going to be certain, I don't know what you want to call them, scenarios, adventures, modules.
Yeah.
It's always varies from place to place. But apparently these are going to have some sort of unique aspect to the overall game
story itself. Yeah, so I am not Paizo or Fantasy Flight Games. I don't have a staff of paid writers and dozens working for me developing modules and content and all that. And so I kind of built the business plan around that fact. Our plan was to allow people to make accounts on the website, and, mm-hmm. and with having those accounts, they could basically get access to free modules, special events, special raid-style dungeons, and things like that. Okay. And in having that, you're going to have a wealth of information available to you to run the game. I'm also kind of against printing modules for $30 to $40. And selling them, because then you as the player, you don't even realize it, but you're basically paying for someone else's idea when you're running a game that's supposed to be all about the game master's ideas. So, like, I just want to trigger those ideas in your head and give some extra fluff through our website. And we've discussed how we might go about doing that. But basically, if you have an account on the website, you'll have access to that stuff. So big part of what makes this kind of unique is people will be able to play their game session, and their GM will be able to fill out a survey through their account on the website. Mm-hmm. In that survey, they'll be asked some questions about, you know, where did you adventure? What part of the world? What region? What did you fight? Where did you go? What did you do? Things like that. And it'll be kind of a keyword-based system and clicking some buttons and some things like that. And then what we'll do at the end of every week is pull all those surveys out and compile them in Microsoft Excel or something like that. Uh-huh. And then I will graph them and trend them, which is kind of where my background comes in.
Okay, yeah.
And I will write, or we and my team will write, the future story of Ultimum based on what the people are doing in this setting.
So the players truly are exploring.
Yes,
the actual setting.
That's kind of one of the keywords, is that they are exploring the setting,
and they'll be able to see the impact of what they've explored.
And you know, we'll put milestone events out there to kind of jump the story forward at certain points, but it's how they react to that that's going to really drive, you know, the meaning behind that event.
Okay, that's very cool, because being as involved with the Pathfinder Society as a lot of us with Scarab are, I've seen how that organized play works with them, mm-hmm. and it seems like it's more about tracking the, not so much what the characters are doing, but tracking the characters as what are they, what are their stats, what levels are they?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, that's the thing, like, without being too blunt, I'm not really interested in what level the characters are. I'm interested in what they're doing. I don't feel the need to regulate GMs and regulate players on all that. Just tell me how you're having fun.
Okay.
You know, of course, if there's a gaming group who decides to make level 60 characters and, you know, do something absolutely ridiculous and mind-boggling, they submit that in a survey, those groups are generally going to be few and far between. So they're not going to trend with the rest of the players who are kind of making, you know what I'm saying? So I don't really have to worry about that. The player base will regulate itself organically as they submit their adventures and what they do.
Very cool. I'm really intrigued by that whole concept. And just from this weekend alone, I think I've probably already got a group that's going to want to play this
yeah, that's good.
As soon as possible. Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything else you feel you want to say about Ultimum or throw at us? We're already drooling
over
this game.
Well, the one word we've gotten time and again verbatim is refreshing. It is a new system mechanically. It's not exactly like anything you've ever seen. It flows very well. And I know a lot of gamers are kind of, because of the flood of Kickstarter projects, it's very difficult to find something that's really unique.
Right.
This game really is unique. Give it a chance. We've had some people blogging, video blogging on their YouTube channel that they were able to make characters and play the game within 20 minutes.
Oh, that's very cool. Very, very cool.
So it's if you're a tabletop gamer, it's worth the try. You're not going to lose that much time doing it.
All right. So again, it's Ultimum and it's
Paradigm Publishing.
Paradigm What you said.
Paradigm Publishing. It's okay.
It's the last day of the con, and I think I maybe had about 4 hours to sleep.
Yeah, I think we're all a little worn out.
I'm surprised that I'm as articulate as I am right now. So there you go. So this is your first real con that you're bringing Ultimum to.
Yes.
And I know I talked to you at some point, and you said that you mentioned that you're really going to be looking at doing more conventions.
Yeah, especially locally. It's really kind of from a business standpoint, it's very much a cost benefit thing.
Okay.
And at this point, the money, you know, invested in expenses for hotels and travel and food and all those things that go along with working at a con for 3 days, I would rather put that into the game.
That makes sense. That makes
sense. I'd rather put as much capital as I can into the game, even if I've already put about $10,000 of my own savings into the game. So like, I really want to make sure that unfortunately, every, you know, day pass ticket for me, I'm like, oh, that could have been a beautiful piece of artwork or something like that I could have put in the game. So I want to do more local Jacksonville conventions. I still have a lot of hotel points for my traveling days. So like, I'm going to use those up as much as I can. But I definitely want to hit the Rapier and Ancient City Con. They're both in Jacksonville, I think in June and July.
Yes, so I'm familiar with Ancient City Con, and I've heard about Rapier, but I haven't actually made my way there yet. But Well, that's very cool. So if you're in the Jacksonville area, be on the lookout for Ultimum. And eventually, I'm sure you'll find Ultimum being run by other GMs at other conventions.
If anybody in Jacksonville wants to try the game out, feel free to email me, and I'll run a beta test at a game store, or you can even come by my house, and we'll drink beer and play together.
Well, again, Christian, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, John.
To my show and talking about this.
Thanks for having me.
That's it. That's the end of this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. If you liked this, or even if you didn't, feel free to send us an email at swarmcast@scarab.com. That's S-C-A-R-A-B. Lots of little dashes in there. Or you can leave us a message on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. If you want us to read any of your comments on the show, let us know. Hey, subscribe to our show. Check out the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Or you can grab that new RSS feed from our website. You can get our website off of Facebook or off of Scarab's website. It's all a bunch of internet flibbity-jibbity. So, until next time, when you think of Scarab's Wormcast, think of this podcast. And when you think of Toast, think of me!
Music on the Scarab Swarmcast is by iFightDragons at iFightDragons.com, MC Lars at MCLars.com, and Midnight Syndicate at MidnightSyndicate.com.
Oh hey, how was bird watching? I made this for you in Arts and Crafts. It's a clay zombie figure. I know you like zombies, right? Okay. I met a girl by the boathouse, she's so lovely. All I want from her is to kiss and hug me. Honestly, I'm homesick, but she makes it all better. Wow, that's beautiful. What's more beautiful? The way she looks at me when she busts her tray. Pen 15 on my hand, Sharpie won't wash away. Thought I was played out on this whole love thing, but she's the type of girl I'd ask to wear my onion ring. I'm 10 years old, I thought girls were gross, but this one's cool, she likes my jokes. I'll keep her safe during capture the flag. Spy on my team for her, enrapture that bad. We go for a walk, I reach for her hand. I'm like, I think I like you, she's like, that was the plan. I made her a sculpture in Arts and Crafts. I farted on the hike, she was the only girl who laughed. Summer camp love is so intense, I'd French kiss her if I knew what that meant.
Down my leg, there's a girl.
The next May comes. She calls me. She tells me she won't be at camp this year. I don't know what to say. I'm sad. Fast forward 8 years. What a surprise. It was well worth the wait. Yo, I'm 19 now with a fun summer job. Camp counselor for kids and it doesn't seem odd. Working at the same place I used to go to. You want camp traditions? Well, let me show you. And guess who's back on staff this year? Little Miss Heartbreaker, oh dear. All grown up and I'm thinking maybe time can do beautiful things to a lady, skinny dipping in the lake, she starts to blush. I reach for her hand and I feel the rush. I hold her close and pretty soon, we're falling in love under a Tahoe moon. I'm like, I think I missed you, she's like, I missed you too. This is what time and patience can do. Summer camp love is so intense, I'd be her man if I knew what that meant. September comes. We go back to college. I holler at her on Facebook. She's all up on my wall and shiz. She calls me the next May. She asks if I'm working again. Fast forward 20 years. Now we're both adults, it happened so fast, and somehow our marriage has happened to last. Had a ceremony by the boathouse where the 10-year-old me first checked her out, and everyone was there, our family and friends. I think I like the way this story ends. We had a little girl who just turned 10. Oh no, here we go again.
Mom, Dad,
what's up, Maddie?
I met a boy by the boathouse.
Summer camp love is so intense. It's so intense. Summer camp love is so intense. Cupid must have taken archery lessons. Summer camp love is so intense. It's so intense. Summer camp love is so intense. This sailboat fits two people perfectly. Summer camp love is so intense. Scared of the ghost stories, I'm here. The moral of the story is that some songs can be happy, just like life. And even though life can be sad, sometimes you just have to smile and remember that summer camp love.